Lent is a time where we're able to celebrate the 40 days, but leading up to Easter. And it's a time to turn from sin and remain faithful to the gospel and be drawn in that journey as we go towards Easter, to go toward the resurrection and celebrating that time. And we focus on three key aspects. We focus on prayer, fasting, and neighbor. And this week, we have the opportunity to focus on neighbor. This is a time to focus on how we interact with those around us, for those whom we journey in relationship with. And I actually want to stay in the passage that we've been looking at for the past few weeks, at least part of this passage. And we're looking at Ezekiel 8 to 11 and chapter 12 as well. And they've been our centering passages throughout this time of Lent and the wider context of the book of Ezekiel. And last year when I thought about using Ezekiel for the time in Lent, I hadn't intended to stay with these chapters, actually, but they seem to fit well with the different aspects of prayer and fasting and neighbor and centering in on the glory of the Lord and our need to turn from sin and create space for His glory to dwell in our lives. So I want to pick up on something that I've kind of skipped over in the reading of these passages. I haven't really talked about it too much. Lent is an opportunity to realize that sin affects all aspects of our lives. It influences how we interact with God. It influences how we're able to pray, how we're able to move in communion and fellowship with Him. And we hear the call to turn from sin, remain faithful to the gospel, and then identify areas and aspects that we can press in with prayer that connects us deeper into what the Spirit is doing, deeper into Jesus and our relationship with Him. Coinciding with this, we look at fasting and the things that take up the place where the glory of Yahweh, the glory of the Lord, where Jesus is supposed to dwell in our midst, in our hearts, in our bodies, and fill the things that fill our lives that we need to move away and then create space and opportunity to fill them with the things that draw us further into relationship with Him to fill our hearts. Sin also affects our relationships and how we exist and with others, with those around us, with our neighbors. For those close to us, but also those who seem far off from us, who are distant from us. Sin creates disharmony, disunity, discord, and strife. So throughout the time of Lent, we hear, turn from sin, remain faithful to the gospel. And we're supposed to turn from sin and remain faithful to the gospel in all these areas and all these facets of our life. In prayer, in fasting, in neighbor, with God, with the things that consume us, with our neighbors, those next to us. So we're going to read Ezekiel 11, 14 to 25, and it's on page 1269 in your pew Bibles. But a little bit about context before we get there, just to refresh our memories. And I'm going to highlight a little bit more about Ezekiel's audience when he's giving these messages. So Ezekiel prophesies before the destruction of the temple takes place, and this is the sixth year into his exile from the land. So this is 586 or 587, depending on how you date certain other events, is when the destruction of the temple happened. And Ezekiel is prophesying just before this cataclysmic event. And in it, in chapters 8 to 11, he is transported in a supernatural vision to Jerusalem, where he encounters the temple, and it's a corrupt temple that has filled the sacred space with things that are not of God, that are not in worship with Him. It's so full that it literally pushes the presence of the glory of the Lord away from the temple, the place where He was supposed to dwell in the midst of the people, in the midst of the temple, in the midst of Jerusalem, as their God. And so in this vision, Ezekiel prophesies that the glory has left the temple. It has left the temple because the people have forced it away. So who is Ezekiel speaking to? And at the end of this chapter, it reports that he reports this vision to the exiles, and it's an opportunity to encourage and motivate them as they are pushed from the land. Their hearts need to be encouraged. They are a group that is filled with despair, having been sent from the land. And how great this despair is, I'm going to highlight in a few minutes the reasons for this. The message, though, that Ezekiel prophesies extends beyond the exiles, and it seems that a lot of these messages were intended to have a second audience with those who are still in Jerusalem or those who are still existing there. Some of the passages seem actually, in the overall book of Ezekiel, seem to have more to do with the people who are left in Jerusalem than it does with the exiled community in which Ezekiel dwells. So let's read the passage together. Then this message came to me from the Lord. Son of man, the people still left in Jerusalem are talking about you and your relatives and all the people of Israel who are in exile. They are saying, those people are far away from the Lord, so now he has given their land to us. Therefore, tell the exiles, this is what the sovereign Lord says. Although I have scattered you in the countries of the world, I will be a sanctuary to you during your time in exile. I, the sovereign Lord, will gather you back from the nations where you have been scattered, and I will give the land of Israel once again. When the people return to their homeland, they will remove every trace of their vile images and detestable idols, and I will give them singleness of heart and put a new spirit within them. I will take away their stony, stubborn hearts and give them a tender, responsive heart. So they will obey my decrees and regulations. Then they will truly be my people, and I will be their God. But as for those who long for vile images and detestable idols, I will repay them fully for their sins. I, the sovereign Lord, have spoken. Then the cherubim lifted their wings and rose into the air with their wheels beside them, and the glory of the God of Israel hovered above them. Then the glory of the Lord went up from the city and stopped above the mountain to the east. Afterward, the Spirit of God carried me back again to Babylonia, to the people in exile there. And so ended the vision of my visit to Jerusalem. And I told the exiles everything the Lord had shown me. I've always found this question very interesting when dealing with the Old Testament. And perhaps that's why it stood out to me in this way when dealing with Ezekiel in this passage here. And it occurs in many sections of the Old Testament. And this is the debate about who is included in the true people of God. Who is in, who is out, who gets the covenant blessing, and who doesn't. And it's interesting to follow this conversation in the Old Testament and all the way through into the New Testament as well. This whole debate starts quite early in the Old Testament with Cain and Abel, with Ishmael and Isaac, with Saul and David, with Ephraim and Judah. And it's continued here with those in the land and those outside the land. Who are the blessed people? Who are the righteous people? Who are those in the covenant and who are those outside? And this is not just an Old Testament question, and this became apparent in Jesus' ministry as he calls all people to himself and is challenging the distinctions that are commonly understood in the time when he ministers. It continues on in Acts after the resurrection as the implications of Jesus' ministry, his life, his death, and resurrection are dealt with for who is the people of God. We see this debate quite harshly in Paul's letters as he argues for the distinctions not being there that were once there before because of Jesus' death and resurrection. And of course, these questions continue in the early church and are still questions we wrestle with today. Easy to create boundaries and distinctions and categories to look at those who are not among us and say, those are the ones outside and we are the ones inside. Or feeling that we are the ones outside and the other ones are the ones inside. Sometimes boundaries are a good thing, and I was thinking back to when I watched a soccer match or football in Europe. My brother had come to visit, and I couldn't get tickets for Freiburg, where we're living, so we traveled a little south to Basel, to where Gary spent some time. And we watched FC Basel play there. And it's common in Europe to actually segregate the crowds because of fan violence, because soccer fans are crazy people, hooligans. In many sports. So they actually segregate the fans to keep everybody safe. So the visiting fans get ushered in. And Basel, we were sitting right next to the visiting fans, but we were protected, they were protected from any sort of violence that could have erupted in the match. But when these distinctions, when these cording off of people are created around who is the people of God, when it's exclusion of those who are outside, when it creates false distinctions, not around who Jesus is and the unity that is in Christ, then something misses from the message of the gospel, that Jesus has come near, that the presence of the glory of the Lord is in our midst and drawing people to himself. So this question stood out to me, the question at the forefront, or the question that's not at the forefront of this section, the question seems quite focused on the glory of Yahweh and his presence being forced out by idolatry. But in the background is this tension between the community that is still in Jerusalem and the community that is outside, that has already been exiled. And this is weaved into the tension of the text at the moment, and it's weaved into the larger context of the book of Ezekiel. Ezekiel is among the group that was sent away from the land, sent away from the place of their birth, their inheritance. And the connection to the land is very important. It's highly significant, even more than we can understand as Westerners here. It was the land that was promised to Abraham, to his people, for an inheritance. Genesis 12, moving forward throughout the Genesis narrative, the biblical story of this land being promised to the people. And following the Exodus, it's highlighted to great lengths that this saving act was to bring the people into the land, and it was supposed to be a land for them to dwell in permanently. And it's highlighted again and again that this is an inheritance for the people, and they go to great lengths to make sure no generation is ever cut off from the land, the inheritance that was given to their fathers for too long of time. Last week I highlighted Exodus 6, verses 6 to 8. This is a passage where I used to talk about new Exodus language. And the last verse is particularly important to this section here as well. And I'd just like to read it out. "Therefore, say to the people of Israel, I am the Lord. I will free you from your oppression and will rescue you from your slavery in Egypt. I will redeem you with a powerful arm and great acts of judgment. I will claim you as my own people, and I will be your God. Then you will know that I, the Lord your God, who has freed you from your oppression in Egypt. I'll bring you into the land I swore to give to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. I will give it to you as your very own possession. I am the Lord." And I highlighted possession in pink because it becomes important. I'll highlight why it's important in a few minutes. So the land was given as an inheritance, a way for the people to thrive, a way of what God had promised to them. And in this language here in Ezekiel, it is used again to highlight that the people who are in Jerusalem view the land now as their possession. They have taken away that distinction for the community as the one who are able to inherit the land because of what God has done for them. And there's this great distinction of those who are in the land, those who are outside of the land. The people who were experiencing the exile, who were not experiencing the exile, who were left in the land, had developed this attitude that they were in some way not under judgment, that only those who were removed from the land were the ones who were under judgment. Those were the ones who were far away. Those were the ones who were far away from the land. So the land was no longer the inheritance for this people. The promise of the Exodus that God had done for his people had been reversed, or no longer the situation. They viewed themselves as being now the only community of people. And what they needed for the community in Jerusalem was to still repent, still acknowledge that they were not walking in true relationship with Yahweh. They had filled their lives with idols, with things that were a distraction from their lives. And unfortunately, the people in Jerusalem don't recognize this and don't respond. They don't turn from sin and remain faithful to the gospel, or press into Yahweh, or remove the idols from their midst. As highlighted in Ezekiel 12, the exile, the punishment is about to happen to them as well because they haven't changed their ways. They've created this category by allowing those who are exiled in the land to be the ones who are far off, making them feel safe, feeling entitled, feeling that they now own the land, that they are fine, life is great, and not recognizing their need for deliverance, for comfort. And this created discord, this created disunity between the groups of people that was already present in what had happened in the exile that Ezekiel was part of. Created greater sadness, greater frustration, greater pain, greater vision. And I'd like to focus on verse 15 for a moment in this section. And I have a translation from the Tanakh, which is the Jewish translation, which reflects a little closer the exact wording of the Hebrew text. It says here, "O mortal, your brothers, the men of your kindred, all that the house of Israel, to whom the inhabitants of Jerusalem say, keep far from the Lord. The land has been given as a heritage to us." And on the next slide, I have highlighting the two texts in the New Living Translation and just a regular translation, the word possession. And this is highlighted in the two texts. the passage of Exodus, the passage of hope as they exited Egypt, as they were saved and delivered of his people, is that God would give them the land as their own possession. And the people here in Jerusalem who look at those who are far off, who think of themselves as having possessed the land, use almost new Exodus language in a sort of, in a way to exclude the other people. And Ezekiel, using it by quoting that, is almost highlighting that this language is not true, that they have not been pushed so far away from Yahweh that they cannot return, they cannot receive his blessing and his protection. Those in Jerusalem viewed that those outside of Jerusalem experienced the punishment of Yahweh, that the Exodus had ended for them. But Yahweh intended that this Exodus movement, this time of saving his people, would endure, would be a continual process for his people as they journeyed in relationship. I want to start moving a little bit more to application in this section with a word of comfort for us. And it's that in the opportunity of Jesus, in his life and his ministry and his death and resurrection, it's a comfort that those who view themselves as far off and also those who consider themselves near can be surrounded by his comfort and his love, can experience his glory in their lives, can experience his lordship and his good news as he comes and fills those spaces. I read Matthew 23:37-39 when I was talking about the glory exiting exiting the temple. And I want to just read this again today and highlight the passage of what Jesus offers to those who view themselves as far off and those who need his restoration, who are consider themselves near as well. O Jerusalem, Jerusalem, the city that kills the prophets and stone God's messengers, how often I have wanted to gather your children together as a hen protects her chicks beneath her wings, but you wouldn't let me. And now, look, your house is abandoned and desolate, for I tell you this, you will never see me again until you say, blessings on the one who comes in the name of the Lord. Jesus longs to gather us and comfort us from the places we find ourselves. Whether we feel that we are those who are far off, those who are broken, those who are in need, those who are experiencing some form of spiritual exile, those who need his comfort, his presence, his restoring life. He also provides comforts to those who are near, who feel we're close in our journey, who feel we are in a situation of joy or a situation of comfort or close proximity. He offers comfort for us whether we perceive ourselves in these categories or not, or we don't know where we are. He offers comfort for us regardless of our class, our position, our proximity, our location, our categories that seem to divide us at times. He longs to gather us as a community together around him. We need to recognize that his love extends to both categories, both camps, both people who view themselves as far off and who view themselves as near. And he breaks down those categories and those boundaries into one people, his people, bringing us unity and strength and peace. But for today, when we're talking about neighbor, the message extends beyond that into us extending that message of hope for those around us. Not using our comfort or our position or the place that we find ourselves as a way to stay far off from others. Whether we view ourselves as those who are far off and who don't feel like we can join into those who are near or come close to the community. Or whether we are those who are near and we need to extend ourselves to those who seem to be afar off, to break over those boundaries and those divisions that separate us. It is easy to think of us and them as categories in viewing life, and I know I struggle with this at time when I think of theological discussions or who's kind of getting the reading of the text right in those type of situations. Relationships and those categories, it's easy to think of, well, I've got this figured out. I've got this place cornered as far as how to view the world. And it makes divisions, it makes disruption, it makes disunity. And passages like this speak to me to find the things that unify us around who Jesus is and how he is working in the world. Passages where Jesus longs to gather all those around himself, when he establishes one people around 2 years, comforting all those who are in need. Moving past the us here and them there categories of life, seeking community that journeys together and is connected to the Lordship of Jesus as the guiding presence. One of the ways to break down boundaries between us is to break bread with those who are different than us, who are we might view in those categories, and sit around the table to get to know our neighbors better. Our neighbors in the pews next to us, and our neighbors who are in our neighborhoods, who are journeying in life together. There's no better way than that, to call together all people journeying. And I use that one highlight, that one explanation, as a way to bridge to the table, because that is the meal that begins that process of drawing all those who are far off, but also drawing those who are near into one place, one table, one opportunity, traveling shoulder to shoulder, recognizing that around the bread and the cup that there's healing and comfort for all, no matter where they are. And we as a community of God's people can go out and invite people to continue that journey, to invite them to this place of healing, this place of reconciliation, this place of the Lord's presence. It's an opportunity to break bread together and to journey in relationship with Jesus.